You are listening to We Saw the Devil, an investigative and conversational true crime podcast that deep dives into fascinating criminal cases that are solved, unsolved, or ongoing. From America's Lori Vallow to Germany's Armin Mivas, we examine and discuss the world's most shocking cases. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow us online. Check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com and WeSawTheDevil on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can become part of the show by backing us on Patreon. Hello, everyone. You are listening to We Saw the Devil. This is Robin, and once again, we are back with breaking news from the Lori Vallow case. Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow today went before Judge Farron Eddins to have the new charges that were handed down by the grand jury read to them. This was not an arraignment. This was merely just to have the charges read to them. And guys, this did not go as planned. On the surface, sure, but we are going to discuss why things may not be as they seem. Joining me today for this episode is Brittany, and you may remember her from a few of our previous Lori Vallow episodes. She and I have been covering this case and discussing this case together for a couple years now, and I have to give credit where credit is due. As we were discussing today's hearings, she brought up a really good point.
Thanks for having me on, Robin. It's been a long time, huh?
It has been. What have you been up to?
Well, catfished a few missionaries. I'm trying to decide when my next baptism date might be, so I'll send you an invite.
Thanks. What are you up to now? Your third, fourth?
No, this will be my second, second baptism. Yeah. It'll be good.
You can do better.
Next time. I'll try again with a new set of missionaries. They usually cycle them out every now and then.
I may have to wash my cat's hair that night, so just let me know when you get to like number six.
Okay.
So
that sounds perfect.
Excellent. So thanks for joining me. I had a blast with you on the previous episodes. And as I stated in the introduction, you know, you and I have been discussing this case for well over a year now. And a lot of stuff, you know, off air that I haven't even brought to the podcast. We were always speculating and we were talking live as it happened. You actually brought up a really, really interesting point, which we will get to in a moment, which is why I had to have you come immediately on.
Awesome. Yeah. Anytime. I'm happy to be back.
Excellent. So let's talk about Chad's appearance today. Overall, as everyone has said, it was pretty textbook. So it was Chad, John Pryor, and then Lindsay Blake, Rob Wood, and then Rachel Smith. Judge Farron Eddins was presiding over this. And why does Chad look the exact same every single time he appears?
Gosh, I don't even know. You would think that they would change it up a little bit, but this guy, like, I mean, he just like found his style and stuck with it.
And his facial expression is always the exact same.
Yeah, he's the most meth mouth looking guy I've seen that 100% has never done meth before. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's almost like he's missing his bottom jaw or something. It just like cocoons up into his upper teeth.
It's true. Everything went pretty textbook, but he did laugh, which I did see a lot of people discussing that Chad had a good old like belly laugh and whatnot before everything got started, which was just really awkward. I don't know. If I were up for three charges of first degree murder, I wouldn't be laughing.
Oh, yeah. I actually must have missed that then because the idea of him laughing in there would, I don't know, I probably would have started shaking. I'd be so frustrated. I didn't see that.
Yeah, he had a nice big chuckle at one point. So basically, Chad waived the formal reading of the indictment as a whole. So Judge Eddins then went over each of Chad's nine charges, going over both the minimum and maximum penalties for each. And some of them are a doozy, guys. I mean, we are very, very clearly up for the death penalty here.
Oh, for sure. And Idaho is down for the death penalty, too. Like, we are 100% on board with that here.
And also breaking news post-hearing, the Woodcocks apparently are as well. They went on Justin Lum. The clip that Justin Lum posted was asking them directly, do you hope for the death penalty in this case? And I don't think that either Kay or Larry could get out absolutely, absolutely, absolutely enough in like their answers. So we know what side they are on.
No kidding. It doesn't come as a surprise though, does it?
No, no, it does not. As far as the sentences, I mean, he has 9 charges, and they vary as far as penalties, right? Everything from like a 10-year prison sentence all the way up to the death penalty.
Can you imagine if he only got 10 years, though? Like, there's no way they're going to get the minimums on these.
No, there's absolutely no way. I mean, I think like in my running count, it was like 10 years, 14 years, $50,000 fine for this one, $45,000 fine for that one, all the way up to and including the death penalty. So I do not in any way, shape, and or form think it's going to be anything like that. I think we're choosing basically life in prison if they do not opt for the death penalty. I think that those are only our two valid options on the table.
And I guess I'm just thinking this now, too. So we know that Chad's house is actually on the market right now for sale. And I believe that the title was already signed over to John Pryor. And so I'm wondering if he gets life, even with all those different things and his legal fees and everything else, like there is zero way this guy's ever going to be able to pay that.
Zero. The last I saw on the home listing, correct me if I'm wrong, it was like somewhere in the range of like $328,000, somewhere around that.
I think I just saw it at $264,000.
Oh, even worse.
So, yeah. And like, I think I read in the description, they were like, it was remodeled in the 1980s. Okay, maybe leave that out. That's not a selling point, but cool. Good job, realtor.
Were the pictures from the home and the listing, were those from the Daybell's home?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry to offend if any of you guys are into like Little House on the Prairie chic, but that home looks outdated and antiquated. Like, I'm surprised it has electricity.
Oh my gosh.
Like the barn that he has houses like the horse and buggy. I don't know, but it is. John Pryor will definitely 100% be sending Chad to collections.
You know what though? There is one thing to note. So with the whole Lifetime movie coming out and all of that, Idaho doesn't have that whole royalties clause in there still, right? So like technically, I guess there could still be money to be made on all of this with book deals and movies and that sort of thing. I just don't know, since they haven't technically been convicted of anything yet, especially with that Lifetime movie coming out, like that's going to come out before we ever see a trial.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess, and I hate to say this, I wonder if he could make money still.
Ugh.
That's so gross to say out loud. I'm like, sorry. Like, I don't like it either, guys. I don't like it either.
Yeah, it's gross to think about. We will do more research on that.
Yeah.
And see if there are any options like on the table for him seeing a penny out of this. You know, as far as Chad, Judge Eddins read through the charges, the potential penalties, and then they did set up an arraignment. As I stated in yesterday's episode, we weren't quite sure if this was going to be just the reading of the charges or an actual formal arraignment. The arraignment has been scheduled for June 9th.
Yes, and we know morning. Yes. Morning is like the vague time period. So block out your calendars.
Yes, take the day off of work. And then they also reconfirmed no bail, which is, I mean, surprise, surprise, right? Especially now.
Can you imagine? I wonder, like, even if he got bail, it's not like his kids would ever... I mean, I'm assuming they wouldn't want him back. It'll be interesting to see what the kids come out and say. I mean, Tammy's family made their statement with everything, but we haven't heard anything from Chad's kids yet.
Honestly, that's probably the aspect I'm most interested in currently, is how are they feeling? I can't imagine. I mean, living with Chad, I'm sure that they bought into it hook, line, and sinker, especially Emma, since she was clearly the favorite. How they must be feeling about all of this with the new charges. Like, do they think that, you know, is it like a Josh Duggar situation where Anna Duggar believes that Biden is attacking her, attacking Josh?
Oh, God.
Or like, are they finally realizing what their father did?
You know, I can say from having been raised in the Mormon church, cognitive dissonance is such a powerful thing. So it wouldn't entirely surprise me if the kids have found a way to, like, for their own mental sanity, be able to wrap their mind around this and be like, oh, this is just a test. This is just a test of our faith, mm-hmm. of our family. I could see Emma and her husband digging in even deeper.
You think so?
I do. I really do. I wonder if the sons, Garth, I believe, was one of them. Solid Mormon name, by the way, Garth. But yeah, I could see like the sons basically just being like, okay, nope. Didn't Emma and her husband, like, they bought the house across the street or something? I mean, they are in.
Yeah, they are in deep. It's unfortunate. That is going to amount to a lot of therapy and many, many years for Emma and a couple of the other kids, I think.
No kidding. Ugh.
But that was it for Chad's. I mean, Chad's was relatively textbook, in and out, ran very smoothly. And then we had to wait. And also, side note, Lindsay Blake is not there to play, like, at all.
No, yeah, she's on top of things. And she's a relatively new face to the entire case, right?
Yes, she is. And she, just her facial expressions, her demeanor, she is not there to play and she will take no shit. So that was refreshing to see. Yeah, and then we move on to Lori. So we had to wait a little bit longer for Lori. It was delayed by, what, roughly 10 minutes or so?
Yeah.
Which was weird.
Yeah, we had to wait a little while.
Yeah, we did. And the same cast of characters showed up. Judge Eddins, Rachel Smith, Rob Wood, and Mark Means, which his future is uncertain. But Brittany, talk about Lori Vallow, because this is your baby here, because you brought up a really, really good point, and I want to make sure that is stated correctly.
Okay. So while they delayed, Judge Eddins came out kind of late and says that the reason why they were late is because they had the sidebar and they're talking behind the scenes. And he says the exact phrase that there were some exigent circumstances that were brought up. And then his eyes get wide and he immediately starts talking about these other things. I thought, okay, I wonder if he wasn't supposed to say that. And so I had to Google it because I don't know what anything means. And it says that in the criminal procedure context, exigent circumstances means that an emergency situation requiring swift action to prevent imminent danger to life or serious damage to property or even the destruction of evidence. So, like, the reason they were late is Mark Means raised his hand and said, we can't have this conversation today. It's not going to work because something serious is going to mess up the defense of my client, right? Something serious enough to the life or the damage or destruction of evidence. It could be a witness. It could be whatever. And my mind immediately goes to Melanie Gibb.
Yes.
Right? Everyone saw that shit list of like, like what? That was the longest list I've ever seen of like, hey, real quick, Melanie, if you don't mind, could you just like export literally every conversation you've ever had on Facebook via text, via burner phone. Also, we're going to need your phone records. And like,
they even asked for her passwords and logins to her emails and social media accounts. Like, they're not even allowing her to export it. They're like, no, bitch, we need your logins.
And that list was long. It took up more than half of a page. Mm-hmm. And Mark Means sent that just a few days ago. And at the same time, the other thing that Melanie had happen is this infamous phone call. She calls a friend up. And has it been confirmed it 100% is her? Like, do we know that?
I have heard it. Speaking for myself, unless that's a really good voice impersonator, that does sound like Melanie Gibb. I do believe, too, that Annie Cushing also has confirmed. And then in multiple Facebook groups that I'm in, and as well as people who know Melanie personally, have stated that that is her. From a legal standpoint, okay, I don't think there's been any movement or confirmation on that.
Okay. But we could like say, since we are not legal experts or part of law enforcement, that was Melanie.
That was Melanie Gibb.
We heard her. We know what she sounds like. And in this call, she has this completely different demeanor, right? Like, she's not this, oh, I don't know, like, you know, the spirit said that, and God, and this, and like,
she's not picking grapes in the vineyard, you know, wearing her little cardigan, pink cardigan, and being like, oh, kindergarten teacher Melanie. She's cold. And yeah,
totally different demeanor entirely. And in this call, she's basically like, yeah, those kids are dead. Like, it's just like, it's really concerning to hear. Yeah. And imagine, again, you're in Melanie's shoes. And so this is where I'm going to tie this all together. Mark Means is like, hold the phone. We can't do this today. The judge is like, yeah, behind the scenes, I've been filled in. Something serious enough that is going to give imminent danger to the life or damage to property to a person, a suspect, or evidence is enough to say, we can't even talk about this today, guys. Mm-hmm. And I don't know when we can. I don't even know when. We'll figure it out. Mark Means chimes in and goes, don't worry, guys. I'm still going to be here. But we have to add this all together and go, okay, something super serious is happening to either evidence, a suspect, or a witness. And all this happened to Melanie behind the scenes. The phone call, the subpoenas.
Don't forget the divorce as well.
Oh, snap. Yeah. Think of Melanie as a human being for a second, right? Like, she is in crisis mode right now. There's no way that she's not. If I were Melanie Gibb, I would have a constant stream of diarrhea just pouring out of me at this point. I would be losing my mind.
I have a meltdown, like, when I have my morning coffee and it goes cold. I have a meltdown. I can't imagine how Melanie Gibb is feeling right now. I mean, the man that she did just marry, that relationship is apparently over. She's not living with him anymore. She just got slammed with, like, the subpoena of all subpoenas asking for her entire life history. Basically, she's having a real bad week. Sweet Melanie is having a really bad week.
Sweet, sweet, precious Melanie. But yeah, so here's my wild theory. And I don't think it's that wild. In fact, Robin and I now have a bet on whether this is going to happen or not. If you guys want to get in on this, let's do it. Let's gamble. But here's my bet. I believe that right now, in this moment, Melanie is either institutionalized or on suicide watch or has already started destroying evidence because of the circumstances that were brought up in that sidebar. The timing is too crazy for it to not have something to do with Melanie. I think Melanie is doing some shit, and we have got to keep our eyes open for whatever she's up to right now.
I completely agree. And furthermore, I will be accepting apologies from everyone who has been leaving nasty messages on my podcast for a year now because I dared to question Melanie, her intentions or her involvement. Because to me, it just always initially seemed like there was something sinister about Melanie, that she knew more. I mean, obviously she knew more, you know, with the kids, the movie theater, lying to police initially, the whole bit. But that 22 second recorded call that we hear the other Melanie Gibb, I mean, that just puts it out in broad daylight. So yes. When you said that, do you want to gamble? And I'm like, sure. And then you're like, I bet Melanie is hospitalized or, you know, something is going on her end. Completely agree. That has to be it. If there's one thing that I've learned, especially while doing true crime, is that there's no such thing as a coincidence. I mean, there really isn't.
Yeah. And I mean, I think if there's another lesson to learn from this, don't trust people that rewear the exact same cardigan every time they have to look nice.
That is the ultimate lesson to be had from this, guys.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see what comes to light out of this whole thing, obviously. But I am going to put money on it. I think we're going to see something come up with Melanie very, very soon.
I agree. I think that there's going to be some big news here in the next couple of days. I can't see that Melanie Gibb would be any different, especially if she's not behind bars. And don't forget, guys, Melanie Gibb does not have an immunity deal. Currently, to the best of my knowledge, only Zulema does.
Right. Yeah. In fact, if we go back, the last time that Melanie and David were together on the witness stand and they were being questioned, that was actually something that John Pryor asked her point blank. Is it true that you do not have a deal? And there was this moment where she actually looked to Rob Wood and then looked back at Pryor, and Pryor called her out on it. Like, why are you looking at him?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder if that was Melanie's oh shit moment of like, should I have asked for a deal before I got up here? So this will be really interesting to see what happens with Melanie. Are we going to find out if she's like in a mental institution, or has she actually tried hurting herself, or has she started actively trying to delete evidence and destroy things that would really impact the case specifically for Lori? If she's going to pick someone to go to bat for, it's probably going to be Lori.
I would think that that could be a possibility, but also after hearing Melanie Gibb's 22-second phone call, she's clearly not the person that she's trying to pretend to be. Like the old public persona of sweet little Melanie Gibb tiptoeing through the tulips in a vineyard picking grapes, wearing that little pink cardigan. Like that's not Melanie Gibb. You know, that became very evident when she's like, yep, I basically helped plan Charles's murder and it was done in self-defense. Like when the friend asked, hey, was that an accident or, you know, was Lori planning it? And she's like, yeah, self-defense. So the entire thing had been planned and Melanie Gibb was abreast of that situation. But hasn't she had enough time at this point to destroy most of the evidence that she would likely have?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and if she was already kind of like trying to clear her thoughts and like almost kind of absolve herself of everything mm-hmm. by calling this friend, and it got recorded. To me, that was her trying to like purge a little bit of it out, right? Get her grievances out there and explain how, oh, these people are crazy. They told me some stuff, but don't worry, I've got nothing to do with it. Where her friend's like, bitch, like, it sounds like you had shit to do with this. Mm-hmm. I don't know. If I were Melanie, I probably would have kept a little something, something to cover myself.
Yes.
Right? Like, I don't know what that would be. She did record her conversations with Chad and Lori. And in my experience, people who are in the habit of recording conversations, it's typically not their first time doing that.
Right. No, absolutely.
So I wonder if we're going to see some more recorded calls come out, whether that's between Melanie and her friend, or maybe more calls between Melanie, Lori, and Chad. I mean, if this was kind of the vibe, these people all ran in the same circle and they were in the habit of recording each other's conversations. Yeah, I'm going to make sure I have a steady supply of popcorn for the next few weeks, because I think we're going to get some more entertainment out of this.
But didn't Melanie Gibb only record that just trying after she had already been in contact with law enforcement and went to them begrudgingly?
Okay, yes, that's fair. But again, who on a whim decides to record a conversation? And keep in mind, Melanie's friend, who Melanie was thinking she was confiding in, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. felt the need at the start of a conversation to record it.
Yeah.
You don't just start recording a conversation like, oh, my bestie Melanie's calling. I guess I better get their recorder out. Like, I mean,
that's true. I wonder how many other people have recorded Melanie.
Yeah. And not just Melanie. Like, again, we're talking, a lot of people are forgetting here because it's been so long. We've got Melanie G to worry about. We've got the Pulowskis to worry about. We've got Jason Mao to worry about. Like, they're Julie Rowe, even, who
she's too busy dancing in her car, Brittany.
Well, she's got to walk it out.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we're gonna hear some more stuff, I'm sure, in the very near future. If this group of friends has already started turning on each other now, the trial hasn't even started yet. They're starting to figure out these conversations, these burner phones. We're going to see a lot more.
I hope so. I am completely here for it. One of the big things that people are contemplating is, what do you think they're going, how do you think they're going to plead? Do you think that they are going to plead guilty or not guilty?
Again, this is the unpopular opinion. But you know what? This is a safe place for unpopular opinion, since you were one from the beginning saying that Melanie G was a piece of shit. So
yes.
My unpopular opinion is, I think John Pryor is a fantastic attorney. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to come into this and say, my client's not guilty. He's already started helping distance Chad Daybell from Lori Vallow, right? Yes. He doesn't call Lori Ms. Daybell, as Mark Means does constantly.
Right.
He makes it so clear, like, no, this is different. This is that. He's even turned, when he had Melanie G on the stand and was saying, isn't it true that you and Lori, and so you can hear you can start hearing how he's going to start shaping the defense mm-hmm. on this. And mm-hmm. I think we're going to see Chad Daybell go into this pleading not guilty. Unfortunately for Chad, I don't think it's going to work, you know, on account of everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I actually do have my hesitations with Lori. I think we've seen how manipulative she can be. I think we've seen how she can really surprise us with things. So I'm a little bit nervous that if she didn't actually get her hands dirty, sorry for the pun, it actually was not intended, but if she didn't get her hands dirty murdering her children, and it was all Alex and it was all Chad, I think we could end up seeing Lori get the lesser of the sentencing if she didn't actually commit those exact crimes. She'll get conspiracy, like mm-hmm, there's other mm-hmm. counts that she's gonna get. But I think if there's anyone who's gonna walk away a little bit less unscathed, it's gonna be Lori.
I agree wholeheartedly on all points. I wonder what evidence they have against Lori for the first degree murder.
Yeah, that was interesting to me, because again, we've all speculated from the get-go that Alex most likely was this executioner, right? Like, he's taken on this role, right? This what do they call it? Like Dark Angel or something?
Which is really interesting. I just actually this afternoon rewatched the interview with Summer Shiflett and Janice Cox, Lori and Alex's parent, you know, mom and sister. And they asked the question, isn't Alex known as the hitman of the family? And you can like see the uncomfortable laughter that Janice Cox comes out with, like, oh, no. He talks about how like how gentle he was and all of that. And it's like, you know that they were aware of him tasing Joseph Ryan and like all the violent acts that he had been accused of. So it's just, yeah, he was 100% the violent like mob slash hitman of the family.
Yeah. So like, I mean, and we knew based on Melanie G and David's testimony at the initial hearing with Chad, John Pryor is grilling them about, okay, what were things like? You were there. JJ was there still. You hadn't seen Tylee. He's grilling them. And then we hear this moment where Melanie G says, oh yeah, Alex had JJ just on his shoulder. So it was a tender moment, I believe is what she describes it as.
Yep.
So thinking back to that now, I'm sorry, I'm just like just realizing this, how absolutely fucked up it is that she said that and then turned around at some point. We should go back and look at these dates and see when was her call to this friend where we see Melanie's true colors come out. When was that call placed compared to the date range where she was discussing just the sweet, tender, innocent moment between Alex and JJ?
Something inside of me believes that David Warwick and Melanie Gibb were well aware that if JJ really did come back into the house, right? Like, do we even know for sure if JJ was actually present, or is the only word we have Lori and Melanie Gibbs?
The only word that we officially have where it's been like publicized lots and lots and lots of times is that the last that anyone saw of JJ was when he was what appeared to be asleep on Alex's shoulder and he was being carried upstairs to go to bed. He went upstairs, carried him downstairs and took him to his place because he was just sleepy or something.
And they were doing the podcast.
So
I don't even know if I buy that, to be honest, but don't forget that maybe that is actually true, because don't forget a couple weeks ago they did the they released that they collected some sort of evidence or blood evidence from one of the apartments.
Yes. And there was a podcast, although we don't have the official dates. It was the Feel the Fire podcast where we actually did hear Melanie, David, and Lori on a podcast. Mm-hmm. Is it the one that was being recorded at the time that JJ was being murdered by Alex? I don't know. But it is interesting to know that what there was, in fact, a podcast that was released with Feel the Fire, I believe is what it was called. Mm-hmm. And it was the three of them.
I believe that that was not the one from that night. I think that the
it
one,
wasn't. Okay.
I don't think so. Listeners, please correct me if I am wrong, but I do not. I've been searching for that particular episode forever. And interestingly enough, it was taken down like right at the beginning of this case. That one sole episode. I mean, a couple others too, but that one really stuck out, you know? Why would you leave others and take that one off?
It's so weird how things just started getting taken down by AVAL, by Preparing a People, Feel the Fire, Warrior Up. That's why these calls that are coming out now with Melanie G and obviously the recorded call between Melanie, Lori, and Chad. Mm-hmm. That's why these things are so amazing, is because you're listening to this and you're hearing what did they sound like when all this was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that makes me just get goosebumps is that they sounded so calm about it all, knowing full well the reality of the situation.
And something that I'm personally grappling with, and this was kind of made known, was it yesterday, actually, in one of the groups, I saw someone, it was the way that the indictments were written, is it almost makes it seem like, you know, initially we were like, fuck yeah, cult, this is a cult, religious extremism, you know, we brought you on to discuss LDS, and then like all of these various sects and whatnot, and different branches, and underground groups, and preppers, and like all of this crap. Could it be just as cut and dry as they created this weird religious narrative just basically to hide an insurance scam?
You know, could it be possible? Sure. But don't forget, they were making money and gaining notoriety from these speaking circuits. Melanie was part of this. Julie is actively showing us what this was like for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
David Warwick,
I mean,
is far bigger than people even give him credit for.
True. I mean, so was this all created? Like, I think we'd be giving them a little bit too much credit to come up with such an elaborate long-term play. That doesn't really match up with things like shallow graves in your own backyard, you know? Like, yeah. I don't think they're the planning type.
No, and sending text messages. Apparently, Chad and Lori were just texting back and forth.
Yeah, I don't think we can give them too much credit. I don't see them as these masterminds. If anything, I think it was just like it was a convenient cover that was just right there in the moment. It's like, oh yeah, we could just, ask our portals what other lives we had and look at that. We were already married. So now we can, you know, have this affair, but it's not an affair. It's actually something we have to do this. We have to. And unfortunately, part of us being together means that our spouses are evil now. So we have to take care of that because God said. So I don't know that it was a planned thing. I think it was just like a perfect storm situation where it presented itself.
That makes sense. It just all came together.
So yeah, we're totally good to continue calling this a cult. It's crazy. It's 100%. Like, those things exist because real people believe it. They buy the books. They pay Julie Rowe. I myself, last year, paid Julie Rowe for some of her services. And, you know, I don't know if her angels are still working on me, but I'm holding out.
Can you specify that was in fact a joke? Because I love you, girl, but like, I'm not going to willingly bring someone on my show that believes in Julie Rowe.
Okay, so 100% it was a joke. I just enjoyed listening to Crazy. I think it's just like, it was like this massive traffic accident and my way of treating myself on my birthday during a pandemic. I can't go out and get a massage. I can't go out and treat myself to anything. But Julie's angels were showing up and ready to just pamper me. So I'm here for it.
They weren't even ready to pamper you. They showed up late, weren't going to show up at all, and then spent 5 minutes with you. And then were like, we'll get back to you. And then you never heard from her angels again.
It's so true. No, well, okay. In her defense, she said that she was going to deploy her angels to keep working on me behind the scenes. So I'd get my full money's worth and then some afterwards. So God. Yeah, I paid like 100 real human dollars to a crazy person to just talk about my deceased grandma, who's not deceased. I saw her last week. She's great. She's healthy and fine.
Oh, God. She needed that money for gas because, you know, it takes a lot of gas money to live in her car, as she does.
I'll fucking pay her again if we can get her some dance lessons or a vocal coach so we can get some better TikToks out of her.
Those are some sad TikToks. I've mentioned it before, guys, on this show. If you need some comic relief, just head on over to Julie Rowe's TikTok. I mean, it really does not disappoint.
I'll spoil the surprise. I'm actually making little gifts and I'm optimizing them so that just our little group here at We Saw the Devil can just send and use Julie Rowe gifts for everything.
Oh my God.
I think she's got everything we need, guys. She's got the shoulders. She's got the dead eyes. She's got the blank face. Like, if you've ever wanted to see a corpse, just shake it. Julie Rowe.
It's so true. God. I've seen cadavers with more animation than Julie Rowe dancing in her car.
I feel like we need to unpack that in another episode about all these cadavers you've seen. We'll have to bring yourself on as a guest at some point.
Interview myself in a Sybil moment. Guys, that is it today. It's actually pretty exciting, though. I know a lot of people have kind of missed the little nuances. The Brittany you picked up on, I was on the toilet, not gonna lie, when I was watching Lori Fallow on my phone. So I didn't see that. I didn't see that little nod, the little text message.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. So if you guys didn't catch it, Robin didn't, as she's mentioned, she was busy with something on a personal matter. And what happened was, they were about to conclude the entire thing for Lori's case, right? And everyone's like, yeah, okay, I guess we'll talk about this later. And Rob was like, wait. So I rewound and you can actually see Lindsay Blake look down. And I believe that she was like texting because she's like, you can see like just little movements and she's typing fast. Then you see this little jump Rob Wood looks down as if he's got a notification, reads something, and he just blurts, wait, one more thing. And he goes, will Mark Means be entering a notice of appearance? Mm-hmm. Meaning, is this guy still seriously going to continue trying to pretend to be a criminal defense lawyer? Like, can I remind everyone for a second? He's not ever tried a criminal case whatsoever, ever.
Never, not once.
Not once. This is his first time. But no, Mark Means is very much in, guys, as far as we're aware.
Did not expect, 100%, did not expect that.
And even, like, the judge, I don't know if he means to do this, but, like, I love reading his little facial expressions. Like, he's got this face, he's like, all right, we'll see.
He's very animated. I do appreciate that.
I guess one last thing, I don't know if this has been brought up yet, but Lori has been, like, there's been that motion that's been put in of her being absolutely destitute at this point. So she has zero way of paying Means.
Yep, it's true.
So this will be interesting.
It's going to be really interesting how this plays out over the next week. And don't forget, June 9th is Chad's arraignment.
Morning. Big morning time.
This will determine a lot. So,
I'm excited.
Me too. So that is it for today's update, guys. Until next crime.